I miss you, man.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Well, I'm sitting here in Santa Barbara being interviewed about this DVD track for The Fugitive.
Yeah.
I guess they want us to talk about this movie that affected our lives.
What movie are you talking about, Andy?
The Fugitive.
Oh, that I remember that.
You remember that one?
Yeah. I liked that movie.
You liked it.
Well, let's go. Why don't we do that? These are really cool titles, Andy. Beautiful, deep, rich colors.
I remember when we talked about it, you and I talked about it, and you say, it's got to be big. It's got to be big. And these aerials of the city were both a response to my wanting to make the needle in the haystack, right?
Yeah.
And the night fabric of a huge old big movie, which we talked about. And they talked to me how this come about. I told him that Copelson came up to me at the premiere of Under Siege and said, I know your next movie. This sequence here, the killing of Mrs. Kimball, was shot by Frank Tidy, my colleague who did Under Siege with us and was the cameraman on the first part of the movie. And we shot about 40 minutes of an opening sequence, and all the pieces got used throughout the movie. Jeroen Krabbe. Mr. Jones enters the movie, I think, 13 minutes into the movie. Is that correct?
I don't know, Andy. I don't know where.
Yeah, we got a lot. We have a long way to go before Tommy's in this movie.
Well,
that's all right.
We can really enjoy this.
Enjoy watching it.
The color. It's really pretty.
Dennis Verkler, our editor, and Dove Honig worked with another three or four editors putting this movie together in actually 7 weeks. We were through cutting this movie 7 weeks after we finished shooting it, and that whole opening sequence was designed by Dennis, the black and white, the slow motion, taken from regular film that we had shot. Here's a couple buddies of ours, Ron Dean and Joe Casala.
Yeah.
Ron is an actor, and Joe is an actor, former policeman. And they were playing themselves here in this scene, pretty much. I was just saying earlier that the studio was very upset that Harrison had the beard on for so much of the beginning of the movie. And they were happy, and Bob Daly was real happy when he shaved it off.
Check this out.
We're reporting to you live from the near north side home of Dr. Richard Kimball, a respected vascular surgeon at Chicago Memorial Hospital. Details are sketchy at this hour, but we understand that Dr. Kimball's wife, Helen, was found murdered in the home this evening. And right now, Area 6 detectives are bringing out Dr. Kimball. We assume that they are going to be taking him to a police station, probably Area 6 at Belmont and Western, where they hope that he will be able to shed some light on what happened here this evening. Now, as I indicated, he was found shortly before...
This is John Drummond, also known as Bulldog John Drummond, the newsman who covered the crime scene in Chicago for years, had voluminous files on the Chicago mob, and appeared in several other of my films doing a role of reporter, commentator.
Oh, really? He's getting pretty good at it.
Hey,
hi, Rich.
How are you?
Remember Kara?
Hi, Kara. How are you?
This is all shot at the Four Seasons Hotel in Chicago where we stayed. And these are the kind of scenes where you get to throw all your high school friends in the background as extras and get introduced to beautiful models.
Straighten that arm, mm-hmm. Paul. You're going to slice.
Rich, GoPro teach you that?
Not my wife.
And the beautiful Celia Ward, who was a great find for us. You know, we interviewed several actresses, and
yeah.
Harrison knew right away that this is the woman he wanted for his wife. I was very happy with that. There's a couple cuts in here that were actually reshot because the man who originally played Dr. Nichols was Richard Jordan, who unfortunately got ill while we were making the movie, and we recast the part for Jeroen Krabbe. And so you'll notice that one cut he had before, Harrison's beard looked a little different. This sequence was not in the script. It was supposed to be just Harrison getting a mugshot. And I decided that it was important to show his emotional decline by doing some interrogations of him to be integrated with the flashback of what happened that night. And So Joe Casala helped me couch these questions based on the details of the murder that the police would have had. Joe Casala, the policeman, you'll see in a minute. And Harrison, you know, really comes apart in this interrogation that's coming up. He falls apart in a way that gives you such emotional sympathy for him. And when we were screening the movie, Harrison was brought into a screening at Warner Brothers the night before we had screened it for an audience. We knew he had a successful movie, and after he saw the sequence of him coming apart, he gave me a kiss because he was so concerned about what was going to happen with the picture, and he knew emotionally we were locked, that you absolutely cared about who he was. So this sequence that we're looking at now with the coffee cups coming in, this is all improvised. Cops had a few questions. Harrison didn't want to know what the questions were. He just wanted to answer them based upon the knowledge he had of the murder.
All right, guys, talk to me. What do we got here?
Hey, Richard, thanks for coming.
This is the University of Chicago. Dr. Bruce Gwirtz was our medical advisor. Harrison spent time with Bruce. He actually observed several operations, probably swabbed up some blood in some guy who's hopefully alive still. We did this. There were actually liver transplants going on in next door to us. We had to scrub down. We had to clean up all the camera gear to shoot this stuff because we were in a real operating situation. I'm very grateful to the University of Chicago for letting us do this.
Co-workers, staff at the hospital, anything like that at all?
No. Anything unusual going on as far as phone calls, people hanging up, maybe people coming to the door, tradespeople?
Fine, no.
No, Doc, I'm in a fight with this guy with the one arm. Did it happen upstairs or downstairs?
That's a real Chicago accent. Joe Casala is true Polish Chicago
right
cop.
Right left arm. Had that little gimmick on it.
Had that little gimmick on it. So that's how you talk to me from Chicago.
Was it one of those with the hooks or?
No, yeah.
And in fact, Harrison's from Chicago. One of the joys of doing the movie was being home again. And he had friends from high school come visit him while we're making the movie.
Besides you and your wife?
Our maid knows what the code is and has a key to the house.
The nuance of Harrison's performance here is he realizes they're pointing a finger at him, and he's starting to come apart here.
When I was trying to move her.
Is that before or
playing with his beard, the beard that the studio was afraid of.
I told you.
Which he so smartly kept to show part of his changing character as he escapes.
You have a gun.
Yes, we have a gun in the house.
Is it registered in your name?
Yes.
Would you usually keep that gun?
It's the one that you cop here is Gene Barge, an old friend of mine who was Daddy G with the Gary and the U.S. Bonds. He was a famous saxophone player. School is Out, Quarter Three. He playing all the solos on those parts. Producing Natalie Cole's albums. King of Blues in Chicago.
Gun.
It's been about five of my movies.
Skin is under her fingernails.
Your wife, she's got the money in the family, doesn't she?
Helen comes from a wealthy family. Yes.
Is she insured?
Yes, she is.
Who's the beneficiary?
I am.
Harrison did not know these questions. He's answering them ad libbing.
Yes.
Financially, you're not going to be hurting after this, then, are you? I mean, she was worth quite a bit of money.
Now, what happened was we shot part of the scene, and I told Harrison he could go home, and I was going to do close-ups of Ron and Joe, and he heard we were still shooting, and he said, no, I want to be there. If you're shooting, I want to be able to play off-screen for them, which is a very gracious thing for a big star to do.
I fought with this man. He had a mechanical arm. You find this man.
How tall is he? How tall is he
from me?
There you go. You're sucked in now. This performance here is great. Just great. Steve St. John went low with the steady cam, looked up at him, and what you're not seeing is his face, and you're imagining his angst. It's great work on the cameraman's part, great work on Harrison's part. This is Jay Hergott walking down the aisle, a kid I went to high school with. He's a lawyer in Chicago. And this is Dick Cusack on the right, the father of Joan Cusack. And the woman with the white hair in the background is, in fact, David Janssen's mother. There was a white-haired woman behind Harrison. She got to be in the movie.
And brutally murder his wife. But you will hear more than that. You will hear a voice from the grave
That's Joe Gazzaldo, another Chicago actor I've worked with several times before.
Her husband, Richard Kimball.
This was shot in the courtroom in Chicago.
Detective Kelly, can you tell us what you observed when you arrived at the home of the victim on the night of the murder?
No forcible entry was found. From the beginning...
This is on a stage. We did the reflection in the swimming pool outside their little hot tub. All done on the stage, a recreation of his apartment. One of the only stage pieces, very few stage pieces in the movie.
We're lucky enough to be able to work on sound stages and on location.
Joe Lauk, another Chicago actor.
The housekeeper and the deceased.
The fracturing of Mrs. Kimball's skull caused a massive hemorrhage to the brain. It took less than 5 minutes for her to die.
So this was all created in post-production, the intercutting of the flashbacks of the murder, his remembrances, and his indictment.
Your Honor, we would ask to play Helen Kimball's 911 emergency call, previously identified by Chicago Police...
Andy Romano, who was the admiral in Under Siege.
Emergency 911. What seems to be the problem, ma'am?
You're still in the house.
Did I hear you right? Someone's in your house?
He's trying to kill me.
Would you repeat that, please? Ma'am?
He's trying to kill me.
Ma'am? Ma'am, is your attacker still in the house?
There was a playfulness that Harrison... created within his relationship with Sela, the idea of the flowers on the stairs, this sort of foreplay before their sexual adventures that night that never happened, and then the remembrance of that, the contrast of that smile with what he's going through now was a great counterpoint.
Having considered all the factors in aggravation and mitigation in this case and found the offense was brutal and indicative of wanton cruelty, it's a judgment of this court that you be remanded to Illinois State Penitentiary at Menard, where you will await execution by lethal injection.
Menard is the prison where John Gacy, the crazed murderer, was there at the time. We actually went down to Menard and looked at it as part of our scouting. Cook County Jail. This is the basement of a grammar school in Chicago where we made the three or four sets. We did the jail set there, we did the hospital set there, and the police interrogation set there on the south side in Hyde Park in Kenwood.
Copeland, what?
This is Eddie Bowe, the large convict who was with Harrison, who escapes. He had been in Under Siege just before this with Tommy Lee also. Peter McGregor Scott is an incredible producer. We've done four movies together now, and this was the second movie we did. We went right off of Under Siege to do The Fugitive. Roy Huggins is a great guy, the creator of the original TV series. I was very, very happy with the movie. I was very so happy he was happy because he had created this whole idea of a movie through his TV show, and to satisfy him was really important to me. This is also shot outside that same grammar school on the south side of Chicago that we turned into a prison exterior. I guess grammar schools are like prisons in Chicago sometimes. So David Tuohy really created the set piece action pieces, the train crash, the escape from City Hall, the jumping off the dam. Those were all in the original script. This is all in North Carolina here, near where we did the train crash. And this bus stuff was basically shot for real on a road at night. It was not done process. You can see the road moving. This today, most of the stuff would be done digitally. So we lit the bus. Michael Chapman rigged batteries, and we did this very, very simply. And while we were doing this, they were setting up the train crash, which tied right into it. We had to match certain things with buses rolling so that there would be continuity.
Hey! Somebody get in there quick!
So we had to come up with some foam for this guy. Alka-Seltzer and milk or something like that.
Come on, he's joking! Come on!
Wait!
The old toothbrush routine. You see Harrison throw himself against the bus as it rolls down here. Kabunk. So that's something that you do and you fake. But you can see how he smashed his face there, how hard he hit it. So now we're at the North Carolina. And we're down by this river. And it's cold and damp at night. We're shooting late at night. And, we had to figure out how to make this train come towards the camera without actually running over, so we put a big light on a cart and rolled it around the corner, and that's how we were able to fake the train coming. There it comes.
What the hell is that?
Give me a hand with this van.
How is you?
Come on, give me a hand with this van.
My doc.
There was Eddie Bo. He always plays a great character. And this is very hard for Harrison. He had to climb out of this window and do all this lifting and dropping. Peter McGregor Scott really helped design all this, and with Roy Arbogast, our special effects man, we did a real train crash here. This is a train being pushed into a bus, real sparks being created by Roy, but the size and the scope of it, except for a couple little insert shots, is all real. Harrison's tying in here is done with a process called Intravision, which today would be a digital process. But he actually was running in front of a plate on the stage. We could see everything was going on. And this is all for real. This is really going on. No miniatures here. We had about 27 cameras set up. And it was a one-shot deal. That was it. It either worked or didn't work. There was no take two. And the engineering of the stunt required, you know, hidden tracks to be put so that the train could break apart and veer off to the side and the engine would land where we wanted to. This is late at night in North Carolina, cold, damp, and I think the fact that we were doing this in that environment, it gives a reality to it. You know, if you start seeing people's breath as they're moving, you feel how real it is.
Now you listen. Don't give a damn which way you go. Just don't follow me. You got that?
Yeah. Hey, Copeland.
Be good.
We're listening to James Newton Howard's score, which was nominated for an Academy Award. This is the second collaboration I was able to have with James. We did a film called The Package years earlier with Gene Hackman and Tommy Lee Jones. I feel that the score is an incredibly important part of this movie.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky to work with James on it.
Yeah.
All right, so here comes the group, the introduction of Gerard and his ensemble.
What a nice company.
Yeah. I was saying earlier that it was important for you to have all these characters around you because it gave you such a wonderful playing field to be Gerard.
Very fine acting company, I thought.
Yeah. And they became good friends. I just saw Scotty yesterday at UCLA, bumped into her. So this is the ensemble of the Modern Marshall Group, and a lot of this dialogue we're making up as we go along. Which is true for the whole movie, right?
Yes, it wasn't exactly making it up as you go along. It certainly wasn't improvisation. It was desperate last-minute decisions under impossible circumstances.
But what we did was we would know what the essence of the scene was. We'd walk through it, share ideas, come up with lines, work with what was on the paper, and then lock it down and shoot it that way.
Yeah.
And this was interesting because this was part of, they wanted us to do a piece for the trailer, and we wound up keeping, you know, the big famous speech, you know, here.
Yeah.
And part of the trailer and part of the script parts of it were kept.
I don't know how, it's still kind of hazy.
And this was cold, damp night we were shooting this in North Carolina.
You're a brave man.
Yeah, I remember the batteries on the Steadicam kept freezing.
But this is a great moment for Tommy, I think, in terms of just the setting up of who he is and what he is. I mean, we had this great sympathy for Harrison, and all of a sudden you go, my God, this is a whole new wonderful character walking into the movie, and it just created this wonderful cat and mouse setup.
Well, looks like you came a long way for nothing.
With all due respect, Sheriff Rollins, I'd like to recommend checking...
You know, I knew Tommy we had made it when Mad Magazine spoofed us.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's when you really know, isn't it?
And Cracked did it for Under Siege, too. Mad and Cracked. We're in the ballpark here.
Well, shit, Sheriff. I'd hate to see that happen, so I guess I'll take over your investigation.
This actor was actually from the area. He lived in L.A., but he came back for it, and his father owned a restaurant around the corner. Nick Cerchi is his name.
All right, fine. You want jurisdiction over this mess? You got it. Okay, boys, gather around here and listen up. We're shutting it down.
Very funny.
Wyatt Earp here to mop up.
Sheriff, before you go, we're going to need
Wyatt
Earp.
Excuse me, Sam.
Oh, wow, gee whiz, look here.
This is Richard Greeley, the sheriff here.
With no legs in them. Who held the keys, sir?
This is all Mr. Jones at his best here, creating stuff right and left, and nuancing things here.
We certainly tried to maintain the illusion of spontaneity.
He might have got out.
He might have.
What the hell is this? A minute ago you're telling me he's part of the wreckage, and now he might have.
So what? We had a great party. Remember that party we had here?
Oh yeah,
the Roman spa party.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was in North Carolina. We were shooting this movie. You know what we were doing, and we had this great sort of party on an Indian reservation with the whole crew. And Tommy and Harrison got to really get to know each other. And
yeah, Harrison is a good guy. We're pals. We only had one scene together in the entire movie, but we were part of the same company every day.
And then I think they sent us a little clip of a teaser we had been working on.
Yeah.
That Teresa showed everybody and got everybody inspired. So here's Harrison climbing through North Carolina.
That's the Tuckasegee River, and boy, was it cold.
Yeah. And this is with a sore knee that he had from running through the woods. And
he had to have surgery on that knee after the show was over.
Right. Right.
He heard it again in the office building.
In the city hall.
Yeah.
Right, this is going through the water here. Yeah, I just shot in Mexico, and we never tested the water to see what the toxic qualities of it were. We assumed since we were in America it was okay.
Oh, the Tuckasegee has trout in it. It's a clean river.
So here we go. So now this is the the chase. Now, Tommy, I want to talk about this chase because Tommy gets on this in this helicopter, and he's left alone at his own wits to create this stuff. We're coming up to that in a minute. Steve St. John's Steadicam running through the streets. Put the hospital sign up there.
Please, don't give me shit, Renee. I got three very unhappy dead people here. Put them on.
It's Joe Pantoliano making that up.
I'm going to have satellite telephone hookup in like 2 seconds.
Chester police just found a blood trail.
Here we go. This is the famous line. Give me a chocolate donut with a sprinkles on top. Which is this is a classic line that's quoted all the time, especially by kids, and written on the spot by Tommy that morning.
Yes,
what are you doing?
I'm thinking.
Well, think me up a cup of coffee and a chocolate donut with some of those little sprinkles on top, will you, as long as you're thinking?
It was a beautiful day we shot this. The sun was out.
Mm-hmm. It was a happy day.
Happy day, yeah. We felt good. I don't know why. We smelled something, I think. I don't know what. Just nice being out in the country. Working. The shot was done at 3 in the morning in the middle of the night. It looks like daylight, but it was done. This is a local hospital. Also in North Carolina. And the idea of Richard Kimball, the doctor, using hospitals to take care of his wounds, find the one-armed man, knowing how to get around, his intelligence is all tied into his being a doctor and knowing how to operate, literally operate, in a hospital.
That's it. I'm going to make some copies.
This guy's in great shape. Not too many actors can show their bellies like that at this age. So this is all done on location. And we had to work out all the little nuances of hiding and getting away.
My, we are thirsty today, aren't we? Now eat up before this gets cold.
See how the paper's blowing in the wind just as he closes the door. I always notice that.
Here you are. Now you eat something, Mr. Johnson. You need your strength.
Became a happy scene for Bob Daly and Terry Sumner when they got Harrison to take his beard off. The concern that leading men don't wear beards or hats. And this became a part of the trailer. Actually, they were working on the teaser trailer while we were shooting, and I said, well, wait a couple days, we're going to shave Harrison's beard, and it became part of the movie.
Harrison does such a wonderful job of painting this character.
Hey, Doc, we're looking for a prisoner from that bus train wreck a couple hours ago. Might be hurt.
What does he look like?
6'1", 180, brown hair, brown eyes, beard. See anyone like that around?
Every time I look in the mirror, pal. Except for the beard, of course.
Doc.
Yeah?
This shtick about the beard and the zipper was Harrison's. He just threw that in.
You ain't here.
Thanks, Doc.
It's
How's he doing?
Pretty good, considering we had to dig him out from under a train.
Get him in there.
Tell the attending he's got a puncture in the epigastric area.
How the hell could he tell that by looking at his face?
The compassionate doctor. He keeps keeping his soul going.
Background just came in from Chicago.
About time. What we got?
We kept company with some deputy U.S. marshals, and were impressed with them. They were... they don't get paid a lot of money. They don't have fancy clothes. They're certainly dedicated to their jobs. And they have... And they seem uniformly to have excellent senses of humor.
This is L. Scott Caldwell and Joey Pants, Joe Pantoliano, who are great, great actors. And Tommy was so gracious to them, and he was Gerard to them, but this whole ensemble, Danny Roebuck, Tom Wood, this is the core of his team, and he loved having them around him. And I think it was important that he have this ensemble of actors around him for him to have the power of Gerard and the humor and the craziness of Gerard to come through. Steadicam, Steve St. John running with the camera.
Just spotted, 2 miles west of Doverville, heading north, State Highway 53.
This whole next sequence, it was done by Frank Holgate, the aerial cameraman.
These helicopter shots are interesting. There's not enough room inside the helicopter for the cameraman, so we just tied him onto the struts. The man who's operating this camera is actually outside the helicopter, standing on that strut.
So today, some of that stuff might be done with process, digitally. We made it for real. And the fact that we did a real train crash allowed us to have those aerials you just saw of the pieces of the train all laid out on the track. Just tying that kind of fabric back into the movie gives it scale and scope, I think. Some of this is second unit stuff done by Terry Leonard, our stunt coordinator. And tying into the lights of the car, of the ambulance. It's very hard to do these things in terms of just timing. You've got to coordinate a lot of things to get everything to blend together. It makes it real.
Is there trouble between here and there? Good. We got pictures.
That dam was put in digitally, actually with Intravision, the waterfall that was on your right just then, just to make sure that it was a setup for what's coming up with the dam jump. And this is a real tunnel in North Carolina. This is a very dangerous thing. Watch as the strut almost hits Tommy Lee Jones's foot. Scared the hell out of me. Every time I see it, I shudder. Watch him get out. Right there. He almost got his foot crushed. Dangerous stuff, skidding cars and lots of people running around. So we had designed this whole sequence knowing that we were going to build the continuation of it on a stage in Chicago, the tunnels. And I like the way Michael kept the warm inside, Michael Chapman kept the warm inside light going with the outside cold light of the end of the tunnel. Keeping that helicopter blade turning. Can't overheat the engines.
Doctor! What do you got?
You gotta be kidding me.
What? You gotta be kidding me!
Shit!
What's going on here?
Shit!
There's another Tommy line. Coming up. You're always looking for goofiness. And we had it. We built this curb. We built the metal grating on top. Put it in here. Here comes a funny line.
We got a gopher.
Now we're on a stage in Chicago, and we took the liberty of having these light shafts to give it mood, and this is a lot of fun to do.
This movie's a lot of fun to watch.
Shut up, Cosmo.
Joey Pantoliano, very resourceful actor.
Dennis Washington and Maher Ahmed, his art director, did a great job doing this, and we had to create a whole system of letting the water flow and be pumped back up for the salt to be continuous and able to be reproducible. Fellini said movies are light, and I think he was right. You know, the mood of a movie, it's where they're in the motion picture business, and the pictures are really what makes this kind of a movie work. Peter's father, Peter McGregor Scott's father, who was in his late 80s, saw the movie before he died, and he was hard of hearing, and he said, I didn't need to hear a thing. The movie worked just by looking at the pictures, and that's the goal you have. The words and the music just be extra seasonings to embellish the meal.
The pistol became an important prop. Hard to use it, though, in the darkness. The black suit on, black coat. So you'll often see me hold it out to the side, trying to get some backlight for it, so that it stays alive.
I didn't kill my wife. I don't care.
Audiences love this moment in the movie. There are very few moments in the movie between Harrison and Tommy, and this begins the eye-to-eye contact for the rest of the pursuit, and the dynamic, which I think is the real motor of the movie now, is set in place. It's really a chase movie, but with a lot of nuance and heart and intelligence on the part of both of these characters. This is a critical thing. We did this towards the end of the shooting, which was nice because we had already sort of established a lot of other things. And now this is on location in North Carolina. It was freezing, really cold. We were scared to death. We were all wired in on the top of that dam. This is on a stage in Chicago. This is on North Carolina. This is in Chicago. Now we're on location still. Back in this. So the matching by Michael back and forth of these things is critical.
Richard, do you want to get shot? Pay attention! Get out on your knee! Right now!
He's on location. And the jump is on his head. Now, and that in fact, is a mannequin. And our editor, Dennis Verkler, that's a pool in the back lot of Warner Brothers where he went in the water. Dennis Verkler always called it Stickman. He thought it would never work, and people totally bought it that it really happened. On location, on the stage.
I get a Peter Pan right here off of this stand.
This dialogue's made up. A Peter Pan right here on this. Boom, this is all made up right here.
Shit. All right, can we go home now?
No. No.
All this shtick is between, you know, this is part of what made this movie wonderful. We were make all this stuff up, get to the essence of the characters, have fun with it.
Here we have the Keystone Marshals.
This didn't need to be in the movie, any of this, but it was just great shtick between them.
Over here, gentlemen. Put two patrol cars on that bridge down there. Four patrolmen have them glass this river. Upstream and down. Next thing I want to see, a helicopter come over here. 100 feet off of this river, make him aware of these wires.
Yeah, what are you out of your mind? He's dead.
I gotta make him easy to catch. hounds. I want hounds on both banks of this river for 2 miles upstream and downstream. You guys got to search the rescue team in this county.
Yeah, we do.
Get them down here and drag the bottom of this spillway. Back down there and turn off the water.
Somebody from county's working on it.
So, John Rutger, the Navy SEAL who helped us on Under Siege, helped Harrison with this. And it was cold. It was really cold. And we only did a couple takes of this, even though he had probably a very thin wetsuit on underneath.
And it was plenty cold.
Great locations. This was an Alcoa aluminum dam, I believe. And the sun finally came out. And watch Harrison. This is him knowing how to make himself muddy and wet.
You how to do your job.
Put the helicopter on the bridge.
Only one person in a million can survive that fall. A guy is fish food.
Okay, get a cane pole. Go catch a fish and eat him.
Created on the spot, that dialogue. Dangerous to bring a helicopter through a narrow canyon like that. And then this is still in North Carolina. We're about ready to go back to Chicago. And Harrison limping, his wound is part of his knee being hurt when he fell during the running away from the train. Harrison had a lot of ideas about this sequence. How he wanted to stage the lovemaking and the remembrances. Cecilia was great to work with. She was just a pleasure. Real talent and this contrast. So once again, movies are contrast and counterpoint.
That man took everything from me.
He can't find the guy. He can't find the guy.
You find that man.
This is shot at Meigs Field in Chicago, right outside of Soldier Field, along the lakefront, for a small airport in North Carolina. And this, I love this tunnel here. The scale of having this lonely figure walk away, not knowing where he's going, this black hole. There were very few sequences taken out of this movie. One was Harrison buying the actual dye in a little drugstore. And There was a scene in that restaurant where he met a waitress and saw himself on television. We decided to lose those two sequences because we didn't want to have him in any way relaxed. This was the waitress he met in the cafe. We felt it would work anyway. She just sort of looking for a man. And there's a Chicago sticker on the car. Probably one of the few questions asked about the series. Why'd you pick him up, you know? Maybe because we dropped the scene. The aerials are just gorgeous in this movie. And it's so rich because Chicago, you can get back from it and see it in a way that you can't from New York.
Tonight and took him home.
2 hours ago, her bus.
I owe you. All right. I just spotted her car outside her house. Does she run with anybody in the area?
No, none that we could find. No family either.
All right, have somebody sit on the car, tell the police that nobody moves till we get there. We'll go first thing in the morning. Your cousin still got his truck.
Mm-hmm.
Call him, tell him we need him.
So this is a twist. You think they're going after Harrison. And I don't remember how this came about, but I think that Silence of the Lambs was a little bit of a twist like this.
I like this part.
This is a neighborhood where I grew up. I grew up in a little nicer part of this area, but this is the area by my high school. In the background used to be U.S. steel mills. It's an old Serbo-Croatian area. This was a small black enclave on the south side of Chicago. Serbo-Croatian area. Blacks, Mexicans, those are the mills in the background, what's left of them. These are old, funky houses built late part of the last century and actually late 1800s. And I went to the YMCA down the street from here. And we had there was a family living in this house at the time. We had them move out, and we had to clean it up.
Hands!
The hat that Tommy Lee Jones is wearing is a hat that I used in my first movie on a young hillbilly kid from Chicago who was a window washer, and we needed a goofy hat for Tommy. He says, "I got a hat for you." George Englund Jr. was the kid who wore it in Stony Island.
Yeah.
Good homeless hat.
I got your man.
Zeddy Bo Smith again.
I got your man, and I'm gonna blow his brains out. I want out of here. You hear me? I want out of here. Now listen, we can work this out.
Yes,
get me.
You're
shut
right.
up. Shut up. You hear me?
Yeah.
Now listen, and I'll tell you what I want. I just want a car outfit. Hold it, don't you?
The rookie, the reticent cop, Marshall. Not happy about having to do what he did.
Shut up.
Back to being the real guy. This is one of my favorite scenes in the movie here. In terms of the Tommy relationship to the Marshalls. It was so cold out here, and the wind's real, and just trying to find this moment between these two guys where he says he loves him and cares about him, it sort of reinforces who his character is.
I can't hear anything. My ear is... I can't believe you did that.
You think I should have bargained with that guy?
Yeah. I do. He could have missed. He could have killed me.
Yeah. How bad's that ear?
It's terrible. I'm going to have permanent hearing damage.
Let me see it. Can you hear what I'm saying now?
Yeah.
I don't bargain. You hear that?
Yeah.
It's about as good as it gets, I think. Another reason you won an Academy Award. He engages you in such a way with his character and his kind of intelligence that you just enraptured. We did this, I think this is a really, like on a Saturday, in very early morning, empty downtown Chicago. So whereas Chuck Norris jumped off the train in Code of Silence, like some of these locations I'm very familiar with, worked with a lot. That's the merchandise mart behind, owned by the Kennedy family. Maria Shriver's father, Sergeant, ran it for a while. The Hancock building. And Dick Cusack, the father of Joan and John Cusack.
Counsel is for you to give yourself up. Now, tell me, where are you?
St. Louis.
All right, give me an address and I'll get there as soon as I can.
Harrison makes this movie really easy to believe. He does that for a lot of movies.
What can I tell you, sir? Mr. Copeland was a bad man. He was going to kill one of my kids.
This is an office overlooking the Michigan Avenue Bridge, the Marshall Office. And we picked it because of its great views out the window. Once again, a lot of people would do this with process and backings, and we wanted to keep it real. So we were sort of dependent on daylight.
St. Louis.
So he showed up not dead yet. Let that be a lesson to you boys and girls.
It's Johnny Lee Davenport, the marshal there.
The dog is always right.
Yeah, you've been right before.
And Michael Baccarella is the, that's one of the Cusack's sons, Billy Cusack, I believe.
Why did you run? Running makes you look guilty.
I wasn't worried.
Michael Baccarella is the one of the other marshals being introduced in this scene.
You can turn yourself in.
I'm not going to turn myself in. I need help. I need money.
I might be crazy, but that train sounds like an L.
St. Louis doesn't have an elevated train.
How do you know it's an elevated train?
Yeah, I think he's right. I live.
That's Michael Baccarella. This is using the city as a fabric in the details of the story, understanding L trains versus regular trains, the use of the background sound of the announcer saying a certain station.
We do.
We got an L. Milwaukee's got an L.
Hold it right there where the lawyer says that he sounds guilty. There's bells in the background. There's a guy on a PA. I want to drop everything but the guy on the PA. Can you do that?
Yeah, I'll try it. Hold on, Sam.
Okay.
Walter, this is Richard.
Richard?
Yeah, right there.
Why did you run? Running when
what's he saying? Sounding next stop. Sounding next stop. Do that again.
Why did you run? Running when makes you look guilty.
Next stop.
Merchandise mark.
Son of a bitch, our boy came home.
That bell is the bell on the Wells Street Bridge. It's six blocks away.
I knew that was an elevated train.
Oh, yeah, big dog, you're never wrong.
Okay.
I'm going to call the CPD.
This is your
Chicago fire. Andiamo, bambini.
Sammy.
Yeah?
When I die, I want to come back just like you.
No, you mean happy and handsome?
I like these people.
I'll notify the press. No press.
Right, no press.
So this is stuff. I don't think a writer can write this stuff the way we did it. I think that you need to have the actors there and be on location and play around with all the nuances. I mean, and a playwright gets to do that in the theater. He has his actors there, he's on the stage, he works and works. In film, we don't get to do that. We don't get to be on location. It's too expensive to be there and to play around with stuff. So if you're given the opportunity to play with it, you can get spontaneous stuff that seems real in ways that you don't if you just have to stay with the script. And the poor writer's never seen the location. He's not there. He doesn't know the distances between the door and the table and things like that. This is Teague Berry, Tiger Berry, who was our set dresser, and he hardest working guy in the film business. Got a couple bits. Here's your Rune Krabbe.
Richard.
Wonderful actor. Sweet guy.
Jesus, you're back. I need some money.
Sure.
We had done this scene with Richard Jordan, who became ill, and we had to reshoot this with you, Rune. I think this was his first day working on the movie.
How can I help you?
He's from Amsterdam. He's a long line of painters in his family. He's a great painter himself. Excellent painter.
Yeah, but Richard.
This is Lower Wacker Drive. I've shot about 8 chase sequences down here.
So, why did Richard Kimball kill his wife?
He did it for the money.
What do you mean he did it for the money? He's a doctor. He's already rich.
Well, she was more rich.
This is Ron Dean and Joe Casale again with Michael Baccarella. All Chicago actors.
Okay, Cosmo, I want
Joe Pantoliano.
The list of hospital staff, is it in the file?
Sure is.
Thank you.
So you guys don't want to use the media?
No, we want him to relax, make himself comfortable, try to re-enter his life somewhere.
Andy found this wonderful Ukrainian woman.
This is a funny sequence. This the kid, the young teenage boy, is the son of a woman we met at O'Hare Field, who was working as a waitress. And she was a real character, and I wanted sort of a Belushi-type kid. And I met her, and then she brought her son with her, and I said, this is the kid who should be the Polish woman's grandson. And this is the basement of a building right down the street where I went to the YMCA when I was a kid in a working-class area by the steel mills. And Bob Daly and Terry Semel came to visit us while we were shooting here this day. And they'd gone to visit John Hughes or something, and they came to see us, and they made some joke about the neighborhood. And I said, yeah, this is where I grew up. And I think they ate McDonald's that day. It was nice seeing them come down to our level. Bob and Terry Semel were the heads of this Warner Brothers for 30 years or 20-some years, and great supporters of mine, and four movies under their reign. And they were really a real institution in the business, running the studio in a very special hand. This is Cook County Hospital. It's the real place. We had to get special permission to do this. And now we're on our set, in our hospital set back at the grammar school on the south side of Chicago. And we created our own mile. Well, this used to be a hallway of a grammar school we created in a hospital set. This is Julianne Moore, one of her early film roles. She just worked with Robert Altman, I believe, in Shortcuts. And we had to do lots of research into prosthetics and myoelectric technology for this to work. So we met all these people who had, you know, lost arms and legs, and got to talk to them and find out how their lives had changed. And Harrison, you know, used his ability as a doctor to track down the technology of what it is that he could refer to find this prosthetic piece that may lead him to the one-armed man. So they realize that some prop man's got to go out and find all these things and hang them up and decide, you know, how to put them in. There's a Chicago Rehab Center. Northwestern helped us out a lot. It's one of the best rehabilitation hospitals in the world, and they were consultants to us here, I believe. A lot of work goes into creating all these sets, the details of them, all the labeling. Now, this is a wonderful sequence. I just finished shooting a film with Arnold Schwarzenegger called Collateral Damage. And the caterer is a wonderful guy by the name of Orlando, who you'll see in a minute, who got his big screen break right here. Singing in the nude is our caterer, Orlando. So when I saw him, you know, his family all over the world saw him in the movie, you know, they heard his voice, and he got a lot of attention for it. There he is.
You guys went to medical school together.
Yes, we did.
This is Jeroen Krabbe. Joe Pants.
You know Morton Feinberg?
I do.
All those pictures in the background, we had a photo to take. There's Harrison on the right, this high school picture.
Okay, I saw Richard this morning.
What? You saw him this morning?
He stopped me in my car. I gave him some money.
Where was this?
Outside my tennis club.
Did he ask you for help?
I volunteered. He wouldn't accept that.
How much money did you give him this morning?
A couple of bucks, just what I had on me.
Well, you'll get far in that.
Why do you think he came back to Chicago?
He didn't tell me that, sir.
No, that's not what I meant. I'm sure he's trying to protect.
This was done on the stage where we did Kimball's apartment. And so, because it's quiet, you see those sirens in the background. We're in a hospital. I think there's an emergency room. There's the arrogant doctor sitting on his Ferrari or whatever it is in the background. His friend Kimball behind him. All these little touches that you work into the frame as you're making a movie to keep selling the relationship between these two guys.
Richard is innocent. You'll never find him. He's too smart.
We're three smart guys.
Yeah, I mean, what about us?
Last time I looked.
Yeah, we're smart. We are. I mean, how smart could he be, really?
That was made up. That was something we added that morning. We're pretty smart. Smarter. See, this is the sequence that we were going to do in that interrogation. That's all we were doing in that opening interrogation, just those flashes. This is South Chicago. I used to buy clothes in this neighborhood as a kid. There's a surplus store in the corner. Downtown City Hall. Little State of Illinois building. This is Bruce Gwirtz, the vascular surgeon from the University of Chicago who helped Harrison become a doctor. Now watch this. On the side it says Kimball in Belmont, and then it says Harrison Hotel. Just fate. And all this stuff here, this montage, wasn't in the movie.
First of all, I want you to know
this is the wonderful Jane Lynch, who just was one of the leads in Best in Show. She's a hilarious actress, a former Chicago. I believe she was with Second City. She's out here now. Just worked with her a few weeks ago. And here's the basement of the Polish person's house, the Polish lady's house. And I like montage. I like where you're cross-cutting all the things going on in the life of a character and how his life is being woven in other people's lives. Just this moment here of Tommy looking out the window, reflecting. Stuff you can't read this on a page and get the impact off of it. Somebody writes it down. It's all done with the acting and the shooting of it. The scene wasn't in the movie. We were going to tear this set down. I said, let's have him go back and look around the empty apartment as part of the montage, just to keep embellishing it. And then James's music sort of ties it all together.
What a waste.
And the audience is asking questions. You want to make a movie where they don't have all the answers. They're saying, what's going on? What's going to happen next? This is Andreas Katsoulis, who's a wonderful actor and a sweet guy. And here's where the remembrance of the type of prosthetic that he was looking for is remembered. There's another false beat of tension. He thinks they're coming for him. And the audience does too. He doesn't know what to do.
Where is he?
It happened to really snow that day. It was nice. Got real snow.
You like stringing out 12-year-old girls, huh?
What did you do to my baby?
Your baby's a drug dealer, lady.
Come on, man.
What are they doing to my baby?
We were happy it snowed that day. Up the Chicago River. This is outside Cook County Hospital. This is an actress by the name of Noelle Gould Simon. She's a very funny character, does a lot of commercials.
Hi.
And Harrison's doing his little authentic, like he's a Polish immigrant himself. Hi. He's adding his little ethnic thing in here.
Start in here, huh?
Okay.
Harrison has a lot of fun with details, you know, and making it all real for himself and thinking about how to make it clever and fresh for himself as a technician as in as an actor, as a character. It's a very tough part for Harrison because in the sense that, you know, he has no one to talk to. A lot of it's very interior. And Tommy's got marshals and guns and stuff like that. So in some ways, the tougher part is Harrison's part in this movie, is keeping you immersed in his character, all in how he's reacting and proacting without having much engagement with other people. The world has changed since computers. Now every leading man has got to use a computer in order to do research or be part of the internet or communicate with people. Covering up the sound of the printer, he bangs on the shades. Chicago hot dogs. They had to get Chicago hot dogs in this thing.
When did he arrive at the house?
About 10:30 in the morning.
And he was alone?
Yeah, he was alone.
You got a good look at him?
Yeah, I got a real good look.
How to make it clever and...
You mean to tell me that this is the guy staying in your mother's basement?
It's like the Blues Brothers.
I'm telling you.
So we're creating chaos that we saw for real at Cook County Hospital. Cook County Hospital is one of the most heavy-duty emergency rooms in the country. If you arrive there alive, your chances of succeeding are greater than almost any hospital in the country because they're so used to burns and gunshots and trauma. And so we actually hired people from there. As a matter of fact, about 2 weeks ago, I was shooting at the Warner lot, and a woman came onto the set. And she said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "You look familiar." She said, "I was one of the nurses in the hospital in The Fugitive as a consultant. And I moved out to California after that. I've been working on ER ever since." So her whole life changed by being an extra in this movie. And it made me feel good that she was able to both stay as a nurse and had a new career as an actress. This is Isaiah Robinson, and he is this son of a friend of my brother's, a musician friend of my brother's. My brother's a musician, and this kid's whole family is so talented. That, I mean, they're all they have record contracts now, and the older brother's like Duke Ellington, and Harrison really bonded with this kid while we were doing this. Here's Julianne Moore. And unfortunately, she was supposed to have a much bigger part, which involved her taking Harrison home and helping him find out about the drug connections and the one-armed man. And we got scared at realizing how the movie was going, that any kind of romantic involvement Harrison would have with another woman would diminish the pursuit of his wife.
What's your name?
Joel.
Oh, look at this. We're eating oranges and we're making IDs.
CCH, what the hell is that?
Cook County Hospital.
You just hang out, okay? You're gonna be okay, pal. It's gonna be just fine.
This is the sort of the best blend of what the TV series, I guess, was about. I didn't, like I say, Harrison and Tommy and I never really watched the TV series. We were too busy in the 60s doing other things, but in looking back at it later, you know, the way Dr. Kimball was able to come into people's lives and make a difference, even though he was on his own pursuit of the one-armed man.
Don't you worry. We'll get hold of her for you. What are you, a football player?
Harrison's great in this scene. He's so natural and caring.
Hey, doctor.
This is Sherilyn Bruce, a wonderful Chicago actress who was in Grapes of Wrath on Broadway with my father and the Steppenwolf Company, Gary Sinise. You know, one of the things about casting a movie like this is showing the diversity of Chicago and the interracial qualities of the city, especially in a county hospital like this, and Indians and blacks and Orientals and Mexicans. And
he never came through here. He didn't. No, he did.
That was an extra who we upgraded. It's great to do that.
Give
an extra with a great face a couple lines.
What do you mean?
I saw you looking at that boy's chest film.
It's a hobby of mine.
It's a hobby, really? What are your other hobbies? Brain surgery?
What do you want?
I want to know how that boy ended up in surgery.
Look, I'm a janitor. I do what I'm told.
That's bullshit. Who changed those orders?
I don't know what you mean.
You stand right there.
She's very effective in that scene.
Hey!
So you realize that little piece of Tommy getting out of the car is a whole separate setup. You know, we go out there, okay, what are we shooting tonight? In and out of the hospital, car pull-ups, you know, the whole night will be made up of little pieces of comings and goings that are part of bigger sequences.
The janitor orders an emergency medical procedure, and the only thing you do to him is take away his ID card.
No. I called security, and he took off down the hall. What was I supposed to do? Listen, Mr.
Deputy Gerard.
I'm really tired. I'd like to go home now.
Okay. How's the boy doing?
He saved his life.
It's a great twist.
Thank you.
He's chasing a man who supposedly murdered his wife, who's saving the lives of kids still as he's on the run. He knows, Tommy knows something's wrong.
Where are you at, this Mondo?
His job is to find this guy, but he knows there's more to meets the eye here.
What I can't figure is the place is crawling with cops, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's looking for Richard Kimball, right? So why would a guy be stupid enough to come and hang out in the trauma ward, act like he's Mother Teresa?
Excuse me.
Yeah, sorry.
See, you didn't know. You know what the confusion was until you saw he had an arm missing. So they were ahead of the audience. The audience is saying, what's going on here? And then it connects.
You guys have a problem?
It's like a puzzle. The more a movie can be like a puzzle, the more interesting it is for the audience.
Excuse me, we have word with you, please. Hello. Yes, this is Dr. Elway at Cook County.
This is Harrison's great here. He's making phone calls, phony phone calls, trying to get information about people with the prosthetic arms. And he had a lot to do with this dialogue in there.
Right.
Age?
35 to 45.
This is Ted Riley with the high school reunion committee. 25 years right around the corner, and Clive is on our list of missing in action. The information gave me a number, but when I tried it, no kidding. Armed robbery. He's where?
Point of attachments.
Mid humerus. That gives us 47 possibles.
L. Scott Caldwell. We were supposed to do the Marshall sequel and wound up doing a lead in a Simon play in New York. So here's the St. Patrick's Day, the famous St. Patrick's Day in Chicago.
And they dye the river green on St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you.
Which we decided to use as part of the fabric of the city. It's the tail of this next sequence. And this is City Hall. The famous City Hall of Richard J. and Richard M. Daley. So we took the liberties of putting a jail in the top of City Hall, or this county building. Really, it's in Cook County. Jail wouldn't be here, but we wanted to have the location and the lockup. Actually, because if it was a court building, they would have some kind of a lockup outside the courts. This is Lily Monka. She died a couple years ago, Chicago actress.
Driscoll Clive. ID, please.
Driscoll Clive R. 2010.
He advises under federal court ruling your conversation can be recorded. Sign here, please.
This is Hinky. This guy is a college graduate. He went to medical school. He's not going to come through all the security, go to the county lockup to find someone his own people say does not exist. Hinky.
Well, what does that mean, Vic? Hinky.
I don't know, strange.
Weird. Well, don't say strange or weird. I mean, hinky, that has no meaning.
Well, we say hinky.
This is made up. This is not scripted. I mean, somebody didn't write the word hinky there. They just had to think of some shtick here.
How about bullshit, Sam?
Visitor for Driscoll. Come on, Rick, let's go, let's go.
Dick Cordos, who helped cast a lot of my Chicago movies, found a lot of these actors for us. And Amanda Mackey and Kathy Sandrich were the lead casting agents. But it's an integration of a lot of Chicago actors with people we brought from California and New York.
¿Cuándo vas a salir de aquí?
This guy was a real character.
You got 5 minutes.
As Gino Credidio, our gaffer, in the background walking away, he had a bit part. And this guy knew all about jails and knew all about the procedure. He was a real technical advisor.
Listen, pal, I wish I could, but I can't. I'm sorry.
This is the scene that really did Harrison's knee in. He had to go straight to the hospital the day this movie wrapped and have that knee operated on.
Seeing outside the windows and seeing, you know, the city outside is a great job of Michael Chapman here in terms of the balance between the location and the exterior. Steve St. John, the Steadicam, doing these kind of subtle moves. Now, Harrison hurts himself coming down one of these stairways. You'll see it in a minute. He jumps. He's limping now. See a little limp? That was after he hurt himself in a different stairway. That was before the injury. See, I, as I watch the movie, I'm always watching, trying to feel Harrison's pain.
Waving a gun and screaming at a woman.
That was Harrison's bit. A great idea. The way of stopping the marshal and being invisible for a minute.
This is my least favorite part of the movie. I was worried about playing a character who would discharge a firearm in a crowd, but it seems that we got away with it. We're highly conscious of safety issues. The property master is always very careful to demonstrate that any weapon is unloaded. Every time the weapon changes hands, the actor will show the property man that it's unloaded, and the property man will show the actor that it's unloaded. We're very careful about that. Not all gun use requires a technical advisor, but it all requires very careful safety regulations.
Topped it off with the wrapping up of the sequence with the St. Patrick's Day Parade. That's the Picasso statue you just blurred by there. And timing it out so we can have all of these pieces go together so that we've got actors running around through a real parade. This was done in about 4 hours, this whole sequence. Put bread down there for the pigeons to be in the way.
Good pigeons.
Now we're walking through the parade. Nobody knows this is Harrison Ford. There's a guy turns, just recognize him. But basically, he's invisible.
We had a beautiful set there, a real live St. Patrick's Day parade. And
long lenses.
Yeah.
There's Mayor Daley. Cops really questioning him. Harrison got permission from the plumbers union to walk with him. They're pretty happy. At Kitty O'Shea's at Hilton Towers. That's where we went and got drunk after the sequence was over. A nice Irish bar. It's very hard to stage this. I mean, the size of the parade and everything going on. Steve St. John worked so hard this day, the Steadicam operator, the cameraman, running around the cold weather, and I was just screaming at him, "Over here, Steve, here we go." He's huffing and puffing, trying to keep up. He did a great job.
Steve St. John, I've worked with him a great deal. He can anticipate what I'm going to do very well, and I'm very careful not to jump out of his frame. Take as much advantage as we possibly could of this event. See? And that was punctuation.
There's John Drummond again.
How do you feel that Dr. Kimball came back to Chicago?
I have no idea.
Marshal, we understand your deputies were at County Hospital today. Was Dr. Kimball...
This is Pam Zekman, another great Chicago journalist, really provocative investigative reporter.
The suspect was tried, convicted, incarcerated, escaped, presumed dead, and is presently at large in the city of Chicago. Is that correct, sir?
All except for the part about being presumed dead.
Detective Kelly, do you believe that Kimball is armed and dangerous?
I believe he's dangerous.
Detective Kelly, he's taking all these chances coming back to Chicago. Do you now feel that perhaps he might be innocent, that there may be a one-armed man out there?
No, he's not innocent. He was convicted. He was convicted in a court of law. He's guilty.
What are you going to do next to try to catch him?
We have no...
There's something about using real news people to play news people. I don't know. Actors have trouble doing it. And the news people can come up with questions that, you know, you're not going to find an actor coming up with, or a writer sometimes. This is a grab shot down Skid Row. South side of the loop.
Detective
think of all the logic. Where did he go get a sport coat? He ran away. He was dressed as a janitor. Now he bought some clothes. He went into a flophouse hotel.
Andy Davis can't resist the blues.
Now we're shooting out in Pullman. This is the far south side of Chicago. Old neighborhood where the famous Pullman riots were. Strike and riots, turn of the century. Company town. Everybody who worked in this neighborhood had to buy their food from Mr. Pullman, the manufacturer of all the train cars, you know. And if you didn't buy your food from there, and he made money on you, both in terms of the housing and on the how you lived. So this is all housing that was originally built for workers in this area. And this is the back of all these little houses that were built. The trees being bare, you know, part of the whole time of year that most people don't like to shoot in Chicago in the winter. The spring was just about to come when we were finishing here. So this is a real location. We had to take the family out of it and redress it. Kept certain elements of it. I had a lot of clothes. I don't know why. I had tons of clothes. We left those in there. Hanging up high in racks. Dov Honig worked very closely with the flashbacks with Dennis Ferkler and the other staff of editors. We had five or six editors on this movie, and it was all cut without electronic means. We had a beginnings of an Avid, which we used for some of it, but mostly was done on film, probably the last film I'll ever cut on film. And Dov, who I've worked with many years, was very much involved in trying to keep the flashbacks alive.
Ballard.
Richard Kimball.
Hi. Good, Dr. Kimball.
What? Sorry, we've been trading phone calls.
Yeah, I've been trying to catch up with you.
So this is all about, you know, remembering the doctors he was working with and how their involvement in this drug protocol and the approval of it makes sense to him now that he's able to see the money flowing from Devlin McGregor to pay this cop off for murdering the wife and being a part of all this. Devlin McGregor goes for Devil and McGregor, my producer partner, Peter McGregor. We always do that. We sort of take monikers of people's names.
Cancun, Richard.
Sport fishing, pina colada.
A lot of detail. You know, we had that was shot in the middle of winter, that fish out by Lake Michigan. We just set up the set outside in the middle of winter, and they had put these guys' shorts on those guys to hold the fish out there.
Oh, this guy is bleeding from every needle.
Say, Les sent this guy in? Is he on that wonder drug?
Yeah, he's on the RDU 90 protocol. Prevacic.
Drug of the future, boys. Clean out those arteries.
So Prevacic caused you to bleed. And that's why it shouldn't have been approved. It was a bleeder. It made you, it's like the aspirin. It made your system bleed more.
He said he did not recall a more lively parade since he became involved with the event more than 20 years ago. That Kimball, listen, is some kind of lad to be running out into the crowd like...
Lad?
Yeah, lad. He said lad.
Maybe he's a leprechaun or something. Listen, I'm quoting this guy.
You create all these headlines. This is Joanne Carlson, my script supervisor, who was in Under Siege. She's usually got a bit part in all the movies. Great Chicago gal.
Ask him if he enjoyed the
Johnny Lee Davenport. He's also been in many of my films.
Do you remember what I told you in the tunnel?
We ought to be sipping some whiskey.
I remember. It was noisy. I think you said something like you didn't kill your wife. Remember what you told me?
I remember you were pointing my gun at me.
You said, I don't care.
He's on the south side.
Yeah, Richard. That's right. I don't care. I'm not trying to solve a puzzle here.
Well, I am trying to solve a puzzle.
5 seconds location.
And I just found a big piece.
Richard. 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 Richard.
So here Harrison leaves the phone off the hook.
He didn't hang up the phone. Where's
so
he at?
They come and find the one-armed man's house, knowing he's going to leave.
Get the CPD right the hell over there.
We got a car there now. Sites.
See, like the cop who's dusting is the same guy who was the forensic expert at the trial. The continuity of actors that you keep using over and over.
So the Kimball's prints are all over the room.
Joe Lauk is his name.
Concentration's right here at the desk. Shared some interest in his photographs. He flipped through the whole packet. Paused right here.
Negatives in there?
Right there.
We have those things.
Camera boy's on his way.
We got you, Robert.
How you doing, Mr. Sykes?
Well, you're doing fine if you tell me what's happened.
I had a little problem.
What, my place or the place upstairs?
Your place.
Well, now.
Step right in, Mr. Sykes.
Everybody knows my name here. Big, happy family, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What is this, a trench coat convention? What the hell's going on?
Well,
who are you guys? Come on, what the hell's going on here?
You had a break-in, Mr. Sykes.
I sure hell hope you're a cop.
I'm Samuel Gerard, United States Marshal's office. This morning, a fugitive named Richard Kimball made a telephone call from this apartment. Why would he do that?
Richard Kimball? I don't know any Richard Kimball. Yeah, okay. I got it. The doctor who killed his wife, right? Kept blaming somebody for it? Somebody with a prosthetic limb? Well, what are you telling me? He's coming after me?
Does he have a reason to come after you?
Well, hell yes, I have a prosthetic arm. I must have murdered his wife, right? Come on, give me a break, will you? I went through all of this a year ago. You should know that. They came here and they questioned me about the whole damn thing. I'll tell you what I told them. I wasn't in Chicago on that night. I was on a business trip. 15 people verified it.
What line of business are you in, Mr. Sykes?
Security.
Who do you work for?
A pharmaceutical company.
Which one?
Devlin McGregor. I handle security for all the top executives.
Do you have any idea why Richard Kimball would be interested in these photographs?
No.
Well, where were they taken? Jeez, that's a big fish.
Cancun, Mexico. It was a junket that the company paid for some doctors.
Kimball go with you?
You don't see him in the pictures, do you?
See, he pronounced Cancun improperly.
No,
Cancun, Mexico.
Don't know him.
And earlier, I think Andreas Katsoulis is from the Midwest. He threw in a bit of a Chicago accent in there.
How'd you lose that arm?
So the whole film was shot in Chicago, except for about 2 weeks in North Carolina, where we did the train crash and the escape from the train and the tunnel exteriors.
Cosmo, this guy's dirty.
Yes, Sam. Yeah, he is.
You want us to put our people on him?
Oh, yeah. I want you to build a camp right here, Henry.
I'll take care of
it. Noah.
Yes,
sir? See this picture with all the fingerprints on it. I want you to find out who the guy is sitting next to Sykes. Mm-hmm. Find out his name, his age, his weight, his social security number, his location, relatives, pets, everything.
Conrad Hilton Hotel, instrumental in the cooperation to make this movie.
Well, I agree. I think that's...
We had shot the package there before, done big scenes in the ballroom, the same ballroom that we wound up using for The Fugitive. And this is shot, I think, in the presidential suite of the Conrad Hilton Hotel. This is the library of the University of Chicago.
Chuck. Yeah, can you talk?
Yeah, I'm on the hotel phone. So, where are you? What's going on?
I found him, Chuck. I found the man who killed Helen.
What? Whenever you do a scene like this, it's critical to know what the other side's saying. Sometimes some actors, no matter where they are, thousands of miles away around the world, they get on the phone, they actually play the scene.
Let's be supervising.
Because they need that kind of reality. And other times, if you can have the script supervisor or another actor read, it's okay. But your dialogue's got to be fairly tied down.
Vince is dead.
What? How?
He died in a car accident last summer. Richard?
Yeah?
Can you prove this about to drown?
Yeah, I think so. I need your help, Chuck.
So the whole subplot of the medical manipulation of the protocol is something that when people think about The Fugitive, they don't think it comes to the forefront of what the movie's about. And yet it was the critical integration of the doctor and his dilemma as an honest guy waving the flag. He's a whistleblower, really. Richard Kimball's a whistleblower in this movie, and the price he pays is the death of his wife and his own being framed.
Excuse us.
And the discovering by both Kimball and Gerard of what's going on and the strange manipulation is the key to the resolution of the movie.
Richard Kimball broke into his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this man?
No. Don't know him?
I mean, this movie is really about corporate greed in a way, and what people will do in order to make money. And seen through the eyes of a doctor and a U.S. Marshal.
It seems like we've been over this ground before, haven't we?
Yeah.
So, if you'll excuse me.
Sure.
Aggie Rogers did the wardrobe for this movie, and it's a very honest depiction. I like all the dark suits here. And even Harrison's subtle changes in his undercover clothes. It's not pretentious, very real and honest. And she's a wonderful woman to work with.
Thank you,
I'd worked with Harrison several times before.
Alternative to cardio, non-invasive arterial plaque-reducing therapy. Keynote speaker, Charles Nichols. Bet you they line up to hear this one.
Joey Pants' humor. Bet you they line up to hear this one. It's trying to show the separation between the level of the doctors and the marshals that makes it interesting. This is the University of Chicago exterior.
So, if you were Richard Kimball, why would you hunt for a one-armed man you say killed your wife, break into his house, call us up, and then split? Doesn't make any sense.
I should have been a doctor.
Look at this blow-up. This guy in the picture with Sykes on his skirt. Chicago Memorial. Kimball's Hospital. I want to go down there.
Go.
See, what's happening now is that Harrison is sort of leading Tommy rather than running from him. He's leading him to what he thinks is the problem with the one-armed man and the relationship to Devlin McGregor. And up until now, he's been on the run, and he's starting to manipulate Tommy Lee Jones. And we're going to get an understanding of how the drug company hired this cop, this ex-cop security guy, to silence Richard Kimball by framing him for the murder of his wife. This is John Watson, who's a Chicago musician. Great quality to him.
You got it.
Thanks, Paul. I'll make sure all this stuff gets.
And in fact, the guy at the University of Chicago Hospital who kept all of the tissue samples in their morgue, he's based upon that character. He's got a jazz t-shirt on. This is a great cue, James' cue. It was used before when Harrison was buying clothes crossing the street. It's like this montage cue. This is Michael Nino in the foreground, a cop. We've seen him throughout the whole film. A friend of mine who's also been in a lot of my films. He was in Code of Silence and Above the Law.
Lentz, a pathologist. I only remember his name because he died last summer.
It's Jane again.
God, Richard. Oh, what are you doing here?
And you can see how the people treat Harrison, his colleagues. They just know he's innocent. They just absolutely know. There's no way he could have been involved in this. So the trick here is how to have this technical medical stuff go on without confusing the audience and still they understand what's going on.
They all come from healthy livers. They all came from the same liver.
Kathy, you beauty.
Excuse me. Mr. Roosevelt.
Yes.
This is a real morgue.
Deputy Biggs, this is Deputy Newman.
Will you know this is where they do the autopsies for the medical school at the University of Chicago.
I just want to know if he knew or ever had any contact with a Dr. Richard Kimball.
I haven't seen Dr. Kimball.
That's not what I asked, sir.
Well, I wouldn't know. Now, if you gentlemen would excuse me, I have some prior obligations to attend to.
Mr. Roosevelt.
Yes?
I think you're lying to us.
You think Lenz is the bad guy?
Yeah, why not? He was one of the original patent holders in RDU 90. I was sending him my tissue samples. He was replacing them with healthy samples, issuing the path reports on them, and shit-canning my stuff. Piece of cake.
Wait a minute. Lenz died August 21st.
Yeah.
Half of the samples he approved were signed the day he died. Someone else must have been manipulating this. Someone with access.
He now realizes his best friend has betrayed him.
Thanks, Kath.
Where are you going?
See a friend. This gives me a headache.
It's a very surprising revelation, young man. Where did Mr. Roosevelt say the good doctor was going?
Sam, he says he doesn't know where Kimball was going.
You believe him?
Yes, I believe him. He says that he was here to pick up some tissue samples.
What?
Yeah, for a drug study. But listen, get this. The release was approved by Dr. Charles Nichols. Nichols also knew Lentz.
Whoa.
He was Lentz's boss.
That means he was covering for Kimball.
Yeah, send the CPD over there right now. No, we're going to send you a bunch of cops. I want you to make sure they turn that place inside out.
You got it.
Don't let them give you any shit about your ponytail either.
I won't.
Well done, young man.
My pleasure, Sam.
It humanizes these characters to make reference to their realities.
Go find me.
Release the hounds.
And that's what's nice about this sort of nice mix of marshals around Tommy. This is actually a pretty complicated plot in terms of the medical protocol and the revelation. And what's wonderful is it's sophisticated, and yet nobody lost it. The audience has got it. They knew some hocus-pocus was up. And usually movies talk down to audiences. And it's nice to make a movie where you have faith that they can follow what's going on.
amazing to me how Michael Chapman got all that beautiful photography.
Those sparks are our special effects guy up there adding sparks to go along with the sound of the L going by, which would really happen if there was a gap in the third rail.
At Chicago Memorial Hospital was on his way to his daily tennis match when an unidentified vehicle swung around a curve, slammed his body into the barriers that separate the drive from Lake Michigan. Yuck.
Sam, you're not going to believe this. I checked Sykes' records for the past 2 years against Kimball, found nothing.
That was a thought.
Yeah, but when I cross-checked Kimball's phone records, one came up. Kimball called Sykes.
Get Sykes in here now.
On the night of his wife's murder, 7:30 p.m., from his car phone.
Cosmo, do you have that arrest report on Kimball?
Yes, Sam.
7:30 p.m.
19:30 hours.
Sam, they just went in. Sykes is gone. He's nowhere to be found.
What?
He's gone.
Juan Ramirez, another Chicago actor. The idea of Harrison constantly being caught. Anybody could look up at any moment and spot him. It was part of the tension of the movie. Done on a moving train at night, back and forth, in a loop around the loop. And in order to see out the windows, it's critical.
This is transfer unit number 23. I got a possible sighting of Richard Kimball on northbound.
I've had a lot of experience shooting on the L's in Chicago. Almost all of my films I've done there have the L as part of the fabric. And they were very cooperative with us.
Next stop, Balboa Station. Balboa.
This is my stop. My stop, too.
Kimball!
Continues to be the doctor. He continues to be reticent about violence and smart about what he's doing.
This is your stop.
I guess he's not too reticent about violence. Oh, anyway. Had to finish the movie with a bang. This begins the swirl of the ending. It's all available light. None of this is lit. It's all sort of natural lighting, you know, and I like working this way.
Sam, transit cop spotted Kimball on the L.
This, of course, is our set.
The CPD is on the way.
Dressed. And this stuff is, you get into helicopter stuff at night, especially shooting from them. It's dangerous and it's scary to me, and luckily nobody got hurt and everything was fine. These are lots of little pieces of first unit and second unit and grab shots that we would do at the end of the night to make the sequence feel like it's all... You need a lot of cuts to keep these kind of sequences going. This is funny. We shot this scene the last night, and Tommy was driving for real. No stunt drivers. And when we and the assistant cameraman, Zoran Glesic, thought we were going to die. Watched it. He does a couple quick turns and screeches around West Streets.
It is a joy and a privilege to introduce tonight's keynote speaker.
This is the ballroom of the Conrad Hilton Hotel. Many famous speeches and political events have taken place in here. This is the hotel that the riots took place in 1968 during the Democratic Convention outside, right outside. From the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, another actor I've had a chance to work with many times.
Suspect seen entering Hilton Tower Mall, lower level. Suspect entering Hilton Tower Mall.
Oh, no. You don't think.
Yeah, I know where he's going.
Is this, these turns like this. This is totally done on the fly. The back camera in the back swinging around streets. Pharmaceuticals.
Will you all please give a warm welcome to Dr. Charles Dickens.
I think there's a woman...
My friends and colleagues.
On the dais who was involved with Physicians for Social Responsibility. We tried to have as many real medical people involved in all of these situations. This is the front of the Hilton, where those riots took place in 68.
CPD just reported an officer down at Balboa Station, a guy with two guns running down...
And after the movie came out, this hotel, they had tours of where the fugitives shot for tourists coming from Japan and from Germany in the Hilton Hotel. All this is shot like 3 in the morning because the hotel had to be cleared and we couldn't disturb people.
A new drug on the cusp of approval by the Food and Drug Administration is poised to...
Creating all this artwork for the names of the speeches.
How you doing?
Good. Sam, I'm in.
This is a set we built for the security area of the hotel.
Through the normal metabolic pathways in the liver. And the drug's name is Provazic. As I will show you tonight, Provazic is remarkably effective and has no side effects whatsoever. It is also noteworthy that this drug... was developed in cooperation, not competition, with the Chicago Memorial Hospital in what we hope will be the model for continued honest... open joint venture.
So here's Chicago extras reacting to Richard Kimball. And one extra overdoing it can destroy the scene. So you know, having people stand up and pointing at him. It's very delicate to ask a group of people to do that who aren't trained actors.
I know all about it. I can prove it.
Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Richard Kimball doesn't feel well, obviously, so... If you just go on with your dessert and coffee, Richard, do you mind to step aside and let's talk? Okay. So, I'll be back in just a second.
You changed the samples, didn't you, huh? You switched the samples after Lentz died.
Let's stay calm, people.
After Lentz died, you were the only one who had the access. You switched the samples and the pathology reports. Did you kill Lentz too?
Huh? Can we get some security in here, please?
Did you? He falsified his research so that our DU-90 could be approved and Devlin McGregor could give you Provazic.
All right, it's all over, folks.
This is, I read an article last week. This exact thing happened. A doctor back east accused another doctor of manipulating a drug protocol for ear infections for kids. One doctor was fired. Another doctor was accused of lying.
You never give up, Rich, do you? You never give up!
This we had to make a breakaway chair for that last whack, so poor Harrison didn't get hurt more. This is towards the end of the shoot, and we're in the end of our shooting schedule. And this is dangerous here. This is a real that point of view I shot out of my hotel room, 7 blocks away, with short ends at the end of the movie. And we were really up on a fire escape there. We had to be very careful staging that fight.
How many extra pilots from this room?
We got a total of 4.
You see, the camera doesn't stop. You're not cutting. This is Bob Ulin now doing steady cam shots, weaving in and out of the people. It's very hard to do this stuff. You're carrying this very fluid rig. And getting permission for the bring that police helicopter so close to the hotel is another complicated thing. Tying it to an actor, you don't want to have any accidents.
This is a rooftop in Chicago.
And we had to get permission from the hotel not only to shoot on the roof, but to build what was a skylight that we were going to be able to crash through and tie into the action that you'll see in a second, which is Harrison falling through an elevator shaft.
They're headed to the north end of the roof.
So all the video that's on the monitors in that security room has to be done, of course, after the fact. We had to shoot all this stuff and then transfer it to videotape or shoot other videotape for it. It's nice shooting at night with wide open lenses because all the street lights go out of focus.
Because I don't want to get shot!
CPD, there's a U.S. Marshal out on the roof. Hold your fire. Call off the helicopter.
So that glass window you see in the background, we created that. And we had to duplicate it on a stage. Actually, we did it there, and then we... Right here. This is all our doubling of it. Complicated. So that you can fight on it and not fall through and then fall through when you want to fall through. That. So this is all built... on the stage, the elevator dropping shot. That's a composite done at the real elevator.
Find out where that elevator stops.
Newman! Northwest elevator, coming or stop!
Where'd they go? Where'd they go?
Harrison fell, but not in that distance. And Harrison actually, there was a double falling on the widest shot. But Harrison clapping his head is all him doing this. So we had stunt doubles for the big fall, and then the close-ups, of course, were all done by Harrison in your room. There's a bit coming up now that Harrison did that I really liked.
Stop to the fifth floor.
They're on the fifth floor. What is on the fifth floor?
The laundry.
It's the laundry. Cosmo, ma'am, stop at the laundry.
Right here. This hand coming out the last minute was Harrison's idea. That's a great bit. Really great bit. Now, the laundry at the Conrad Hilton also washes all the sheets and towels and bedding for the Palmer House. It's a huge laundry. I mean, you can't believe how many. They have conventions in Chicago day and night, you know. So it was a really scary place in a way. We were playing around with, where the perfect setting would be for the ending.
There were probably 17 endings, ongoing process.
We knew we wanted to have Harrison resolve the drug protocol issue at this convention of Devlin McGregor. Then once we found the laundry, it was such an interesting location and had so many places to hide and different textures of steam and noise and danger. we wrote the ending to take place in that laundry, which I think is one of the more powerful laundries of the world's hotel business. Those are the real night crew people working the laundry. The little people nobody recognizes.
There's those charming blue bags.
So this sequence, this ending, we had to really work out. There was a question of how it resolved, how much violence would be involved.
You gotta love that guy.
Whether Joey would die here or live, how violent Harrison would be. And this took a lot of conversation, and we finally were able to resolve it into everybody's satisfaction, and work within whatever the context was of the set we had chosen. It's really pieces, the little pieces. Once the conception of the scene is there, it's a puzzle on how to build tension with all these three elements going on. A lot of false leads in this movie. You think it's one thing and it's another.
We're now getting into the desperate part. We never really had an ending for this movie. So we had to do a scene of exposition there toward the end. You'll see that I'm tying up some loose plot ends in the basement of this structure here. I remember that day looking up at the blue laundry bags hanging from the ceiling while I was shooting that scene, telling myself, Jones, here you are in the middle of the night in a basement in Chicago shouting exposition to a bunch of blue sacks. Your career's over. You'll never work again. Get used to it.
It's like the Greek choir. Tommy summing it up here.
Wife's murder. He had the keys. No forced entry, Richard. He telephoned Sykes from your car, Richard.
I don't know what in the world that was that hit Joey Pantoliano in the head.
Point. Oh, still hurts. We had to create this out of balsa wood with a pad on the end of it.
Richard,
we
were
part of a railroad track.
Richard, I'm either lying or I'm going to shoot you.
Bad guy.
What do you think?
And Harrison, you know, Tommy questioned the use of a gun in City Hall. Harrison was not sure about how he wanted to resolve this relationship, whether he wanted to whack him or kill him, you know, and finally he realized that he had to take some retribution against the guy who killed his wife. But he did it in such a way that it was in saving Gerard's life. It wasn't just to kill him. So we were able to solve that problem of the just doctor. Now he saved his life. Now Kimball has saved the life of the man who's been chasing him for the whole movie. And this is where it all comes together. He's told him he thinks he's innocent. He just saved his life. And I just think the audience felt relieved and happy that these two guys had found some closure.
They killed my wife. I know it, Richard. I know it. But it's over now. You know I'm glad. I need the rest.
So this is a sign of respect. You know, it's hard to catch your smart butt. You know, hard to chase you down. And then the Kimball theme comes back at the very end, and all these characters who've been haunting the movie, the questions by the press, and only really Gerard and Kimball knowing what really happened.
I've never seen so much when I've been around here a long time. Seen that much police action.
You got a deadline. Play the weather over again.
Oh, yeah. Tell Samuel Gerard I'm going home.
Kept Joey alive. Let him be in the sequel. Now he's his protector rather than his pursuer.
Where is that thing?
See those hands, Sergeant.
Tending the man he's haunted. Very satisfying ending for an audience.
Thought you didn't care.
I don't.
Don't tell anybody, okay?
And to be able to have a crane in the middle of Michigan Avenue was pretty lucky. This is like 3:30 in the morning. I love you, Chicago.
Well, it's just a wonderful movie. It's a lot of fun to watch, this movie. I first saw it in a theater in New York, and my reaction was delight. I was very happy to see that theater full of people, and I was highly gratified to listen to them laugh and cheer and clap. Made me feel pretty good.
Well, this is a lifetime experience to make a movie like this with this talented group of people around me, and I hope I get to do it again. It was a very unique experience, and like I say, once in a lifetime that you get to enjoy making a film that turns out this well.
I've done three movies with Andy, and I hope to do three more at least. Making movies is a hell of a lot of fun, let me tell you that. And I like going to them too.